Broadcasting from the Taz and Lake Lodge Studios.
Sporting Journal Radio.
Sporting Journal Radio. The Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
All right, welcome to the show. My name is Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in across the network right here on this very radio station. 29 stations across the region. By listening to the podcast, which if you are listening to this podcast right now, go to our Facebook page. You have the chance to win some tickets to Pheasant Fest coming up February 14, 15, and 16. Minneapolis Convention Center. More details coming up later in the show. Or thanks for listening on demand at sportingjournalradio.com. You can listen to the show right there anytime you need to. This week, Jared Wicklund from Pheasants Forever joins us to talk about Pheasant Fest, and then he's also going to talk about public land access. So I was at the DNR roundtable last week, whatever it was. The new duck plan, the new duck action plan, as well as the pheasant action plan with the Minnesota DNR, talks about the acquisition of 4,500 acres per year in the WMA, Wildlife Management Area Program with the DNR. They want to continue that pace and potentially increase it. So wildlife management area acquisitions of 4,500 acres a year. Plus, that's pretty good pace, I think. But lack of access may be the number one issue on why we're having a decline in hunters across the state and across across the country. So we'll discuss that a little bit with Jared Wicklund. That's going to be a big topic at Pheasant Fest this year. More details coming up. Joe Henry and I discuss our question of the week. Would you support a trumpeter swan season in Minnesota? That was another topic that didn't come up in main discussions, but a couple of us just in between sessions at the round table were discussing it. And we have a pretty good number of trumpeter swans across Minnesota. Would you support it? Pretty healthy debate going on right now at the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page. Join in and offer your two cents on whether you'd support a trumpeter swan season or not in Minnesota. Also, Curtis Blake checks in from Devil's Lake. Interesting Devil's Lake this year. Perch have been tough, but I'll tell you what, the walleyes are absolutely on fire. I'll tell you where they're catching them and how they're doing it coming up here in a little bit with Curtis Blake from Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort in Devil's Lake. This week's show brought to you by Hay Bale Heights. Go up and catch some of those walleyes out of a snow bear. Go to haybaleheights.com to plan your trip today. Also by Tazen Lake Lodge, Trophy Lake Trout Northern Pike in northwest Saskatchewan. Go to tazenlake.com to get your trip for this summer planned. We're booking up fast. I'll be up there all summer. Come join me. Also by Lake of the Woods Tourism, plan your trip to Lake of the Woods. Get ready for pike tip-up fishing or extend your walleye season in Minnesota at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. And of course, by the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. That's coming up in March. Come see us. We'll be doing an appearance out there. You can stop by and see me at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Go to mndeerclassic.com for more details. The best showcase of Minnesota bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com. Ice fishing season is here. This winter, plan a trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not only will you have the chance to catch your legendary perch, but this year, Hay Bale Heights has been catching big walleye after big walleye. And they're doing it from a mobile, comfortable snow bear. No matter how cold it is outside, you're warm and toasty on the inside. Learn more and book a trip today at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. World-class fishing in a scenic, remote Saskatchewan location can be found at Tazen Lake Lodge. With lake trout catches nearing world record sizes, including a 47-inch by 35-inch giant, estimated to be around 70 pounds. See the picture now at TazenLake.com. Tazen Lake Lodge will also put you on giant pike, and you can learn more about getting there at the Tazen Lake Lodge booth at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis, April 2nd through the 5th, or go to TazenLake.com. Tazen Lake Lodge is a proud partner with Tourism Saskatchewan. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are, and there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Broadcasting from the Taz and Lake Lodge studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
It's that time of year where everybody listening to the show that enjoys the outdoors, it's when you start thinking about pheasants and pheasant hunting, right? Of course, well, a guy like me, I'm thinking about pheasant hunting all the time, and especially when I drive down the road here in western Minnesota and I see roosters and hens running around all over the place. Gets me excited for next fall. Hopefully they make it through this winter. And we're going to talk more about pheasants and more specifically an event that's coming up where pheasant hunters and upland hunters from all walks of life and all areas that are around here that can all join together in one location and talk birds. Jared Wicklund's going to join us now from Pheasants Forever to talk Pheasant Fest. Jared, how's it going?
T-Bone, I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming back on again. And
no problem.
I know last time when we talked, we said, all right, let's talk again when we get close to Pheasant Fest, and we'll talk about what's happening at the event this year. And I said, yeah, no problem. Thinking, you know, gosh, that's going to be a long, long time from now when we do that. And it's almost here. It's time to talk about this thing.
Yep, it's almost here. It's right around the corner. And just keeping an eye on everything, making sure we dot our I's and cross our T's. But National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic snuck up on us fast, and the big weekend, February 14th through the 16th, is almost here, and we're excited for it.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about this year, of course, because it's back in our backyard here in the Twin Cities. Was it been 5 years since it was here?
Four? 2017 was the last time.
It was seven. Oh, it was 17. Okay, so it wasn't that.
Yep.
Wasn't as long as it just seems like it was a long time ago, I guess. But you guys take this and bounce it around to different areas in the region.
We do. You know, we were here in 2017, and then we went to Sioux Falls, followed by Chicago. Now we're back in Minneapolis, and we've got some other targets on our mind that we'd like to explore. But yeah, it does bounce around the Midwest, and it helps keep the show fresh for people. You know, hasn't been here for 3 years. We've added some new and exciting elements to the show that I think a lot of people are going to enjoy, and I'm involved in one of them. On our public lands pavilion stage, and we can definitely talk more about that.
That's exactly what I wanted to talk to you about. I feel bad because I meant to tell you a few of the topics that I wanted to talk about in addition to Pheasant Fest on this interview, and I never got back to you. I apologize about that, but I wanted to talk about public lands because, in fact, I think I saw it on a post maybe from, it might have been the On the Wing podcast. I can't remember where I saw it, but it was about Lantani and public lands. And
yep.
A lot of people were commenting. I was reading through the comments on there, and a lot of people were talking about the demise. I shouldn't even say the demise, but the decline of hunters on the landscape. And I've had a lot of discussion about this with different people, and everybody wants to be doom and gloom about it. And I don't think that's the right tone to take. Of course, it's very serious because hunters do foot the bill for a lot of conservation dollars. But I think there's a lot of different things to look at, and there's so much. I was at the round table last week, and there was so much discussion about recruitment and some different things. And I felt at times that there were people were looking in the wrong direction. Like people are focusing their efforts in the wrong directions. And of course, recruitment in the R3 movement is very important. But access, I think, is maybe the most important topic out there for attracting hunters, whether they be retention or reactivation or even recruitment in that sense. And that's one thing, of course. Pheasants Forever has always been about public land access and habitat work, right?
Yep. And I think you're spot on. You know, this new public lands pavilion that we have is celebrating the thing that you were just talking about, is access. And the country's 800 million acres of prairies, forests, mountains, just public lands in general, open to Americans for hunting, hiking, exploring, fishing, those types of things. And you know, I think it really depends. Like you go south of the Minnesota border down to Iowa, their public land setup down there is vastly different than we have here in Minnesota. You know, for the state of Minnesota, if you're talking public lands, let's say for deer or for rough grouse, I would submit to you that, you know, we've got a lot of public lands out there, and you can go spend a day out in the woods and not see another person. You know, when it comes to the pheasant range and the public lands that we have there, it's a little bit of a different story. Lacaparo County in western Minnesota, I think, is sitting at 6% public land, and that's the biggest public land base, you know, in the farmland region, in the pheasant range. And a lot of people tell you, you know, there's other counties out there where we have a need to raise the amount of public lands that we have. So this is kind of the public lands pavilion is sort of a rallying cry around that. And, you know, it's bringing in people like Sam Soholt on the public lands bus, which is going to be one of the backdrops for this stage. I encourage people to come check that out. Lantani, as you mentioned, is going to be a speaker, probably one of the more charismatic speakers in the country when it comes to protecting our public lands. I'm going to be running a grouse panel on that stage. We're going to have the DNR commissioner there and a couple of pretty influential legislators. So, you know, everything that's done on the public land stage is all pointing back to the public lands that we do so much enjoy and get out on. And, you know, as part of that here in Minnesota, we're extremely lucky to have that legacy amendment and the attached outdoor heritage funds. We've done something unique and special here in Minnesota, and part of the stage over the weekend is to celebrate that.
People don't realize, people are so quick to criticize the Minnesota DNR and what's going on in Minnesota. I've done it at times. I feel sometimes we're a little conservative in our regulation setting process. But people don't realize how good we have it when it comes to access in public lands and public waters, for that matter, here in the state of Minnesota. I know you've traveled around and hunted other states, and I have, and I've gone to some states down south for waterfowl hunts, and I talk to the locals down there about fishing, and they talk about, you know, access to fishing is I mean, the opportunities for fishing are almost non-existent, and you go out east and you hear about some of the states where you can't hunt on Sundays. I mean, there's some ridiculous things out there, and we have, and you're right, the southwest part and the pheasant farmland region down there, we could use some more public lands, but you get up in the northern forest, and there's a lot of public land up there, and I don't think people realize just how good we do have it here in Minnesota.
No, and I think a lot of people take it for granted. And like you said, I mean, I was one of them back in the day, and I'm definitely not that way anymore. You know, public lands are critical to access and to getting people outside. And you know, I think one of those things when people start into hunting and they're going the way of public access because they don't have any contacts for private land, you know, having those game populations on those public lands to help them have a successful outing. You know, whether you harvest or something, that's secondary. But you know, everybody loves it when you do, and you can bring something home for some table fare. And you know, as part of that public land access, our job is to help manage those as well. And I think if we're not only acquiring land but managing it to the best of our abilities and putting the best quality wildlife habitat we can on the landscape, we're doing justice for not only ourselves as hunters but for wildlife, for bird watchers, for water quality. Yeah. And those are all major themes of the Public Lands Pavilion.
So at Pheasant Fest coming up February 14, 15, and 16, right? Convention Center, Minneapolis.
Yep.
When you talk about the Public Lands Pavilion and Lantani's going to speak and Sam's going to be there, Sam Soholt, he's great. Is that going to be a place where people can, like a question and answer? Is that going to be discussing ideas of how we increase public land access? Or what can people expect at those?
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, Friday going in, there's a couple different things on there, and it all gets back to a seminar schedule that's designed to look at not only pheasants and quail, but a number of different upland birds. So, just to give you a sneak peek, you know, at six o'clock on Friday evening the 14th, I'm going to be hosting a Great Lakes rough grouse on public lands with Nick Larson of Project Upland, Ronnie Bame of the Hunting Dog Podcast, and Ben Jones, the president and CEO of the Rough Grouse Society. We've got top public land hunting strategies that day as well. You know, you switch over to Saturday, it's hunt bobwhite quail within 8 hours of the Twin Cities. You know, more public land strategies. There's a panel discussion there with Sarah Stroman of the DNR and some of our legislators about our Minnesota public lands and how we can make them better and continue to protect more of them. there's just a lot of things for people to see and take in on that stage. And I think the really cool thing, Sunday, by the way, is basically planning your own rooster road trip, and it looks at like five different states, which if you're ever interested in going south or west, there's some really good information there. But the cool thing about the public lands pavilion is that the exhibitors in those areas, when they signed up, agreed that, you know, 10% of their net proceeds from the weekend are going to go back to Pheasants Forever, and we're going to use that for our mission to buy more public land in the state of Minnesota, which I think is awesome.
That's awesome. That is great. Jared Wicklund, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Pheasants Forever talking about Pheasant Fest coming up here in a couple of weeks. Did you get a chance to see the new pheasant action plan from the DNR? We were at the round table and I enjoy the round table. I had some great conversations with people with the DNR and as well as people that were there attending. But I have a bone to pick with it because there was essentially 15 breakout sessions in the course of 3 hours in the afternoon. You had first hour, you had five different sessions going on, second hour, five different sessions, third hour. And they suggest, well, you can bounce around to different sessions. Well, nobody wants to bounce around. Once you go into one, you're kind of locked in there. Well, there were three the first hour that I wanted to be at. And I feel like 14 out of the 15 were based on climate change. And I was like, come on, guys, we don't come on. And then five of them were on hunter recruitment. And then there was one little
quiet there.
Mika's even worked up about this whole thing because there was only one. There was like two on deer and CWD, one on wolves. And then there was one little breakout session where they crammed ducks and pheasants together, which granted the two kind of go hand in hand when you talk about habitat and the action plans, because it's all about grassland and nesting and acquisitions and things like that. But I was a little disappointed that there wasn't more of that. And I had Steve Cords pulled aside and I was like, Steve, you know, we got to increase the days we can hunt ducks in this state or implement the teal season, or we got to do this or this or this. And he goes, those are all great questions. Bring them up in the hot topics breakout session, which that became a wolf discussion for an hour. So there was no talking about birds whatsoever in that one. So we learned about the duck and pheasant action plans. And I did learn some things that I didn't know about, which I thought were interesting. So I kind of want to pick your brain a little bit, Jared. I don't know if you've had a chance to see him, so I apologize if you haven't, but one thing, one of the goals, at least in the duck plan, which it goes hand in hand again, like I said, one of the things in the duck plan was to continue the acquisition of WMAs at the current pace, which is 4,500 acres a year, or potentially increase that. And then there was a plan to implement more WMAs, or wildlife management areas, within 30 miles of a population center of at least 15,000 to 20,000 people. I think that's a great idea, and that's one way to increase access for people that live in the city that don't have a long ways to drive. They don't have a lot of time to drive out into the country to find some pieces. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, I don't know if you've had a chance to see this, but there was going to be a new model of a wildlife management area close to those population centers that were going to have enhanced facilities, more wildlife opportunities and recreation opportunities. I didn't get a chance to ask anybody about that. And I just worry that those WMAs are going to be more for, say, wildlife viewing or hiking or whatever. I want to make sure that there's going to be hunting type opportunities on some of those. But in any case, there were some good goals in the plan to increase access out there.
Yep. So, you know, I'll maybe try to answer your question, but as somebody who lives in the Twin Cities, and I've got 10 acres of my own, but I back up to a wildlife management area of 500 acres. We're actually trying to add on to that right now with a 380 acre acquisition that we're trying to do for that same purpose, right? It's 25 minutes to my house from downtown St. Paul. You can get up there on that particular public area this year. I harvested two deer off of it on the first day of gun season, which was great. And there's plenty of pheasants. I actually saw a whole kit and caboodle of pheasants this morning on the way to work, sitting in a crab apple tree, just off the edge of that, having a bite to eat. So, you know, in my mind, there are still places that we can create not only access, but wildlife opportunities for hunters. And, you know, I think Carlos Avery probably, I think it's the largest wildlife management area, if I'm not mistaken, in Minnesota, is right on the edge of the Twin Cities. A lot of people know about it. I've been up there for the opener of duck season before, and you know, I didn't have a great experience there because I think we counted like 55 trucks that were parked there.
Oh boy.
You know, trying to find a spot. But for the most part, you know, making sure that we're buying more public land and managing it again to make it the most productive it can be for wildlife, and not just for pheasants, but for ducks and deer and turkeys and bear and everything else. I think it's totally doable, and you know, adding that in and creating more opportunities for people near these large population centers so they don't have to, you know, drive a couple hours to go grouse hunt or what have you, I think is a great idea. And it's something that we continue to work on with acquisitions. We've done a few in the past few years on the north side of the Twin Cities just to create those opportunities for sportsmen and women.
Well, we got to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk more about what you have coming up at Pheasant Fest, February 14, 15, and 16, Minneapolis Convention Center. And you gave us some tickets to give away. And so what can we give away again, Jared, with the radio show?
Well, I can do, we got a couple of 4 packs of family tickets that you guys can give away. It's good for any day of the show to get in there and spend a couple hours with the family perusing around what National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic has to offer.
So what we're going to do is look for this podcast posted on the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page, and everyone that shares this podcast, likes and shares this podcast on Facebook, will be entered to win, and we'll give away those tickets here in a couple of days. Jared Wicklund, Pheasants Forever, our guest right now, Sporting Journal Radio. We'll come back. We'll have more from Pheasant Fest. We'll talk more about public land access, and we'll also talk to Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods. We haven't even gotten into my main topic this week was trumpeter swans and a potential hunting season on trumpeter swans. We'll push that back and talk to Joe about that a little bit, or you can comment right now on the Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page. Plus, Curtis Blake from Devil's Lake to Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on the way. World-class fishing in a scenic, remote Saskatchewan location can be found at Tazon Lake Lodge. With lake trout catches nearing world record sizes, including a 47-inch by 35-inch giant estimated to be around 70 pounds. See the picture now at TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge will also put you on giant pike. And you can learn more about getting there at the Tazon Lake Lodge booth at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis, April 2nd through the 5th. Or go to TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner with Tourism Saskatchewan. The best showcase of Minnesota bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com. Ice fishing season is here. This winter, plan a trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not only will you have the chance to catch their legendary perch, but this year, Hay Bale Heights has been catching big walleye after big walleye. And they're doing it from a mobile, comfortable snow bear. No matter how cold it is outside, you're warm and toasty on the inside. Learn more and book a trip today at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tazon Lake Lodge Studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Our guest, Jared Wicklund, Pheasants Forever. You may have seen him on the season premiere of Prairie Sportsman, which aired recently on Pioneer PBS. And we went sharptail grouse hunting in East Central Minnesota. I've had a lot of people comment about that show to me, Jared, saying, I didn't realize you could find sharptails over there.
Oh, yeah. We saw some. We just couldn't get close enough to them. And And we saw one of their long lost cousins, the Chinese ringneck, on one of those properties too. And I happened to miss it clean. So yes, that was good too.
Last time we talked about how good of a season it was here in Minnesota, and we're still seeing birds all over the place. So I want to focus a little bit more on Pheasant Fest, which right now, if you're listening to this podcast, go to our Sporting Journal Radio Facebook page. You'll see a link to this podcast on there. Like the post and share it. You'll be entered to win. It was a 4-pack of tickets, a family 4-pack, Jared?
Yep, family 4-pack of tickets to any day at a Pheasant Fest.
Very good. That's February 14, 15, and 16 at the Minneapolis Convention Center. Anything new this year, Jared, or what can people expect there?
Yeah, I'll just go through and name a couple of the new things we've got going. So on Thursday night, so even before the show starts, one of the new things that we're doing is a Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever Film Fest. So that involves Project Upland, Orvis, Duck Camp, Ron Scherer Productions, and obviously Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever, taking people kind of from the desert to the prairie. With erupting coveys of quail and flushing pheasants and our favorite four-legged companions, to basically do some epic short films about upland hunting. So if you're interested in that type of thing, that's on Thursday evening ahead of Pheasant Fest at the Poor House in downtown Minneapolis.
And I heard next year Prairie Sportsman's going to be involved in that. Is there any truth to those rumors, Jared?
Oh yeah, I think there is. I heard that too.
I had a lot of people ask me why we weren't involved in that. I was like, we'll do some talking.
That's a good point. That's my bad.
That's all right. It's all right.
You know, moving into the show, it opens Friday, 11 to noon is going to be the Bird Dog Parade, which kicks it off every year. We got 100 dogs signed up this year with a lot of different breeds. I think we got 35 sporting breeds this year. So
Holy smokes.
And check that out. The show kicks off. Obviously, we talked about the Public Lands Pavilion celebrating all the public lands we have, not only in the state but nationally, which is a cool thing. We've got a Women, Wine, and Wild Game event, and that's going to be on Saturday. Basically, opportunities for more women to become engaged, to be dynamic conservationists in their communities. So that's on Saturday at 11:30 a.m. in the Minneapolis Convention Center. The show floor itself, one of the other new things is a path to the upland stage. And that's basically what we talked about at the beginning of the show, recruitment and retention of new hunters. You know, if you're an aspiring upland hunter, want to get involved, this stage is going to give you all the tools and the people to contact in order to do it, which is going to be great. And then lastly, you know, in addition to the dog stage, which is always a staple of the event, and our wild game cooking stage, we also have a new show floor live auction. So this is going to be at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday. Admission includes complimentary beer from Lion and Kugels and a chance to win a firearm. And there's a large variety of hunting and fishing trips on there, anything from bear hunts to dove hunts in Argentina and everything in between. So if people are looking for something fun to do on Saturday and maybe come away with a pretty cool trip, come check out our show floor live auction. That's going to be on Saturday of Pheasant Fest starting at 1:30 p.m. just off the show floor. There'll be a lot of signage for it if you're interested.
One of my favorite shows, you know, you get in this industry like you're in as well. You do a lot of these different sports shows, and anytime you can involve, you know, bird dogs, you're gonna have my attention. This is just a fun show to be at, a great show to be at. February 14, 15, and 16. What are the hours, or where can people find out more information?
Yeah, you can go to pheasantfest.org for all information. Friday, the show is 12 to 7. Saturday, it's 9 to 6. And Sunday is 9 to 4. We've got just a few tickets left for our Friday night Upland Rally and our Saturday night National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic Banquet. Those feature about 12 to 1,300 people apiece. And Friday night, we've got live music starting at 7 o'clock from Chris Cruzy, who I think was the runner-up for The Voice last year on NBC.
Jared Wicklund, Pheasants Forever. We'll see you at Pheasant Fest. Thanks for giving us the lowdown. Good luck on the event this year.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Brett.
Now we're going to transition from pheasants to walleyes and check in with Curtis Blake from Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. In a snow bear right now, it sounds like, Curtis.
Right next to a snow bear, actually, watching my guys working fish.
Oh, are fishing outside today?
I'm walking around outside, yep. Fishing, well, just popping some random holes and checking some other areas and letting my guys do their thing in the snow bear.
Not a bad day to be outside bouncing around a little bit, but those snow bears, you can't beat them being warm and comfortable inside. And I'll tell you what, Curtis, I know people come up for the perch and you're catching some perch, but my gosh, you guys catching a lot of walleyes right now.
You know what, with the toughness we've seen of the perch this year, and this year specifically, it's one like no other guide out here has seen. I've been talking to people, been talking to the locals, been talking to the tourists. They come out, drill hundreds and hundreds of holes in this nice weather we've had, but they're just not catching the perch like we have in years past. Now, we don't know exactly what to attribute that to. The perch are still there, but it's just been a tough year with them. So we've been spending a ton of our time focusing on these walleyes, and we have been doing some really cool things with them because usually, you know, you fish walleyes for a little bit, and then you go out and you do the perch the rest of the day.
Right.
Well, with this year, it's been really hard because the numbers just aren't there for us to be filling the buckets with perch. Oh, there's another walleye on right there. Just as I'm talking.
Perfect.
Nice. Nice one. Anyways, like I said, these snow bears, again, you can't, you know, say it enough. The mobility, moving around, hitting structure, working flats. I mean, there's so many different spots you can fish. You know, like anybody knows in a boat, trolling is obviously easier than finding these fish in a 6 to 8 inch hole. So being able to move quickly, you know, following fish, looking in new spots for fish is huge. And with the walleyes this year, we've been working some different stuff now, focusing more on the eyes, catching them throughout the day, not just for that morning bite and that evening bite, catching them all day long, ranging from we're catching them in 3 feet of water down to 23 feet of water on one side of the lake. And then another side of the lake, we can go and catch them in 12 feet of water to 35 feet of water.
Wow.
I mean, it's just amazing how many walleyes are out here on Devil's Lake and how active they are this year.
Curtis,
it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, Curtis Blake, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio on Devil's Lake right now, Haybale Heights. And you actually had a picture on Facebook the other day that you had a nice walleye in it. And not only are you guys catching walleyes, you're getting some good fish too.
That's the nice thing is we'll sit there, and especially in the shallow water, right? You know, out here people always talk about, you know, complaining about those deep water fish, how they're not going to go back down.
Right.
When you catch them in shallow water, it's so easy to release them. And with some of the quality walleyes we're catching on Devil's Lake right now, it's great to be able to see them go right back down the hole. Yes, I've had a couple of real nice ones this year, and I think the one you're talking about was the, I think it was 28.
Nice.
28-incher, and oh, got another fish on! Fish on!
Perfect.
And yeah, I mean, it's fun, especially when I get to, you know, get out and catch a few myself. It makes it all the better.
Absolutely.
So come, you know, Devil's Lake, guys, walleye fishing is great right now.
So did you say you're catching them in 3 feet of water?
In some areas, yes. We've been catching them as shallow as 3 feet of water. It actually makes it really tricky, you know, for the beginners to learn how to read a Vexilar in 3 feet of water, because obviously your transducer's at the bottom of the ice, and then you've got about, you know, anywhere 3, 4, 5 feet of water underneath you. And so a lot of times, you know, what's really fun, I know you love the stories, and for anybody that's out there listening, if you're fishing shallow water, their walleyes are going to be there. And you can catch them without even using the Vexilar, because sometimes
you don't mark
them.
You're
sitting there watching your mark. You don't mark them.
Yeah.
They come right in and just bang it that you didn't even see that fish because he was an inch away from it before he starts showing up on your Vexilar. So if he's in a hungry mood, boom, all of a sudden you just have a fish on your line and you didn't even see him.
Right.
A lot of fun in shallow water.
Well, if people want to get in on this hot walleye bite on Devil's Lake and come up and fish out of a snow bear at Haybale, Curtis, what should they do?
Guys, check us out online, haybaleheights.com. We've been posting a lot of our stuff on Facebook, as always. You can watch us there. Get a hold of us right through the website. Phone number's on there. And like I said, we still got plenty of time, plenty of ice left and plenty of water, so get on out here.
Haybaleheights.com. Curtis Blake, thanks for the time on Sporting Journal Radio.
Yep, thanks, Brett. You have a good one.
World-class fishing in a scenic, remote Saskatchewan location can be found at Tazen Lake Lodge. with lake trout catches nearing world record sizes, including a 47-inch by 35-inch giant estimated to be around 70 pounds. See the picture now at TasmanLake.com. Tasman Lake Lodge will also put you on giant pike, and you can learn more about getting there at the Tasman Lake Lodge booth at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis, April 2nd through the 5th, or go to TasmanLake.com. Tasman Lake Lodge is a proud partner with Tourism Saskatchewan. Ice fishing season is here. This winter, plan a trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Not only will you have the chance to catch their legendary perch, but this year, Hay Bale Heights has been catching big walleye after big walleye. And they're doing it from a mobile, comfortable snow bear. No matter how cold it is outside, you're warm and toasty on the inside. Learn more and book a trip today at haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. The best showcase of Minnesota bucks under one roof is back. The Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic is coming March 13th, 14th, and 15th to Canterbury Park in Shakopee. See Michael Waddell and Nick Munt from TV's Bone Collector. Get your antlers scored and visit with over 150 exhibitors. Plus, there's the Wild Trails Kid Zone. Parking is free at the Outdoor News Deer and Turkey Classic. Now at the new location, Canterbury Park in Shakopee. March 13th, 14th, and 15th. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com. That's mndeerclassic.com. If you want to have success fishing in Minnesota, you have to go where the fish are. And there may be no lake with more fish in it than Lake of the Woods. Not just big numbers of walleye, sauger, perch, eel pout, pike, muskie, bass, and sturgeon, but numbers of big fish too. Between the Rainy River, the main lake, and the Northwest Angle, you have over 50 resorts to choose from. Guided fishing allows for heated transportation to heated fish houses. Learn how to book a trip now at lakeofthewoodsmn.com. That's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio. Broadcasting from the Tasman Lake Lodge studios, this is Sporting Journal Radio.
All right, welcome back to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest radio home for the outdoors. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Brett Amundson. You can listen to us a number of different ways via the podcast, wherever you get your favorite podcasts, iHeartRadio, iTunes, podcast apps. You can listen to us on demand at sportingjournalradio.com or tune in each time right here at this time on this very radio station, 29 stations around the region. And growing. Now we're going to talk about fishing around the region and specifically Lake of the Woods right now because border waters, we're starting to talk about the end of the ice fishing season already in some certain situations. And then you have certain situations where the walleye fishing goes a little bit longer. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of those border water differences, specifically up in northern Minnesota with Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, how are things?
Did you say 29 stations?
29 stations.
Oh man, you really kind of universe there, haven't you?
It's been a fun ride, and I'm very thankful for the radio stations for carrying the show. And
you know, it's funny because when I'm going to different sports shows and things on the road, I find myself listening to different podcasts, and I find myself more and more pulling up this radio show because. Just because I'm on it once in a while, I don't get to hear the other speakers you have, the other people. And we even talk about some of those folks off air, and it's very interesting to me. And so I find myself gravitating to the podcast.
Well, I appreciate that. And, obviously we talk fishing reports here and we have some regular guests that appear on the show, but we always try to have one major topic that we discuss that's different each week too. And Joe, this is a little off topic for you and maybe out of your wheelhouse, but being in central Minnesota, where you spent a lot of time, you probably will know all about this, but we recently spent time at Swan Park in Monticello and had a chance to see all the trumpeter swans there. And anybody that's been around the state for the last 30 years knows the story of the recovery of the trumpeter swan population, and just know how many of those noisy birds there are around here. Very cool birds, the largest waterfowl in North America, I believe. And they've recovered to the point where they could sustain a limited harvest. Well, that's a touchy subject. And when I was at the round table, I just had some discussions with just random people, not necessarily DNR, but just random people that were there. And we kind of brought up the big population of trumpeter swans across Minnesota. And I could go either way with it. I wouldn't mind seeing North Dakota has a ton. It's a tundra swan season, but you in flight, tundras and trumpeters are pretty hard to tell the difference between the two next to each other. There's a size difference and then there's a noise difference. But on the wing, they're kind of hard to differentiate. But it's a lottery, and they have a limited number of tags. You get one swan per season, and I could see Minnesota implementing something like that. And I don't know where you stand on swans, Joe, or anything like that, but I'm assuming you've seen as many as we have when you're out driving around, especially in that central Minnesota area.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, you know, I reside in St. Cloud, and, you know, when I head down to the Twin Cities, oftentimes when you get down by that Monticello area, you'll see them flying over the freeway to go to fields and stuff. And they're fun to watch. You know, it kind of reminds me a little bit of, you know, they have sandhill crane hunting in some states.
Absolutely.
You know, there was a little bit of controversy when they opened up mourning dove hunting in Minnesota.
For sure.
And, you know, it's kind of the same thing. And I think, you know, like a lot of things, whether you're talking about wolf populations or whatever, it's balance and it's moderation. And, you know, I guess we put a lot of confidence into our Minnesota DNR to help manage. And in this case, it might even be higher than it might be a federal thing. I'm not sure. But, you know, if the numbers support it and if it's on a limited basis, I guess I wouldn't have a problem with it.
Right. Yeah. And that's just it. You brought up sandhill cranes, and that's a whole that gets brought up hand in hand with the swans, because we do have the Northwest zone for cranes. We just don't have it. And that's a mid-continent population of cranes versus the eastern population of sandhill cranes. And that's why we don't have it statewide in Minnesota. But doves got brought up, too, because they pretty much wanted to burn down the Capitol, I think, when they legalized a mourning dove hunt, when that's the most widely hunted game bird, I think, in the galaxy. So it's a tough sell sometimes in Minnesota, but what isn't a tough sell, Joe Henry, is walleye fishing. And what's cool about Lake of the Woods, we get to go a little bit longer up there.
We do, yeah. And it is one of the neat things. And I really don't think, you know, really just because of, you know, a lot of the Twin Cities news stations and things, they don't really, and they're not up on all their rules and regs for the state for fishing. So oftentimes I'll see reports that, you know, hey, ice fishing is closing down here at the end of February, and fish houses have to be off the ice at the end of February. And, you know, that's true for a good part of the state. But up at Lake of the Woods, because we're border water with Canada, you know, we're still Minnesota, but we're border water with Canada, we have some different regulations. And, you know, we're fortunate enough, we get a whole extra month of our fish houses being out on the ice. So you can have fish houses out overnight on the ice at Lake of the Woods through March 31st. And certainly the thickness of our ice, you know, usually dictates that. Secondly, you know, our walleye season is open through April 14th. Now, that allows a lot more ice fishing. That also allows that season on the Rainy River. On top of that, our northern pike season, it's continuous. It never closes. Mm. So that means that, you know, that extra ice you have up there, that extra whole month of ice fishing, that can be some of the darndest best ice fishing in the whole year, because a lot of those fish are putting on the feed bag. They're the pike in some cases are getting into their pre-spawn areas, so they're congregated for tip-up anglers. It can be a real, and it's almost to the point where the days get longer, that sun's at a different angle. You honestly have to wear, on a sunny day, if you're outside, you have to wear sunscreen.
Oh, absolutely.
You will get a sunburn. It's bouncing off that ice. It's really strong that time of the year. And, you know, we're all white because we're Minnesotans and Midwesterners and, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to tip-up fishing up there, Joe, is that something that's offered? Is there some guided pike fishing with tip-ups up there with some of the resorts?
There is, you know, there's some resorts that will do, they'll actually take houses and stage houses and, put houses in certain areas where the pike are going to be congregated, so that you can use one of their fish houses for like home base. And then you set up, tip ups around them. In fact, there's a number of resorts that do it. I know one resort right now that they're actually placing houses in some of the more shallower water areas, and they're actually catching a good number of good pike as we speak. Mm. They're just, you know, the pike eat all winter long. They got to live somewhere, and they know where they live, and they're doing actually very well. Now, the pike fishing on Lake of the Woods really gets its notoriety in March, because that's when, like I kind of mentioned, they don't school, but they get congregated because they're in common pre-spawn areas, usually outside of bays or outside of, you know, reefs or shorelines where they spawn. And, you know, the anglers will go out and pursue them with tip-ups. They use typically a quick strike rig. Well, they'll use for people that don't know what a quick strike rig is, it's a piece of leader material that comes down and it wires out. And then where it wires out, it's got a treble on each side with a little spinner. And you hook one treble in front of the head and one treble in front of the tail so that your big minnow will hold horizontally in the water column. Whether it's a live sucker, whether it's a dead bait like a dead Cisco or or you know, whatever you're using, you can hang that bait up. Some people lay in the mud because those pike are used to grabbing dead fish off the bottom of the lake. Some people suspend them in the water column. You try different sets, and in different times, there's different sets that work better than others. But the nice thing about a quick strike rig is that, you know, when that flag goes off, you can typically go there and set that hook right away. That pike is going to have one of the trebles in its mouth anyway. The other thing is it's a good conservation measure, being that they don't swallow that hook all the way down. You can set that hook quick and get them in the mouth.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about pike fishing with tip-ups right now. And up there, it's fairly shallow water, right? And you're dealing with a lot of ice. So sometimes you don't have a lot of water column to work with up there, right?
You know, you don't have a lot of water column to work with, but you know, you don't need a ton in the sense that the water is stained water. So it's not like those fish are so spooky when you have gin clear water. So yeah, it you know, anywhere from, I mean, gosh, I've heard of anglers fishing in, you know, 5 feet of water below the ice all the way to, you know, 15 feet of water in some cases. But the point is that you're fishing those shallows where those fish are staging for the spawn. And then what'll happen is, as those pike will go in and spawn, sometimes they even spawn under the ice, you can get in some of those back bays and actually catch them in the open water as well. When they're back in there, you know, Lake of the Woods has a pike limit of 3 pike. I mentioned it's a year round limit, and of the 3 pike you catch, there's a slot limit that you have to return to the water. Anything 30 to 40 inches long, you put back immediately, get your picture and put it back. You're allowed 1 pike over 40 inches per day.
And that type of slot will grow big fish for sure. And there's no spearing up there, right?
Well, actually, there is spearing. Yeah. And we do have some anglers that will spear early in the season, traditionally when the ice is thinner. And, you know, they have it gets dicey, obviously, because you have that slot limit.
Right,
so
right.
The people that do it, they really try to get dialed in on what they have some different things they use, which isn't perfect. But based on the underbite of the northern pike, how far that bottom jaw hangs out. They have, based on their spear hole, some of them will, I mean, they have different things that they do. But that also keeps some people from spearing just because they don't want to have to worry about sticking a fish that's in that slot. You know?
That'd be tough to judge. Everything looks a little bit bigger underwater too. And I know when we go over to Wisconsin to try to spear sturgeon, they put down cross sections of PVC pipe. And they'll put little hash marks on there at times just to try to give you some sort of visual representation. So if a fish comes along, you can try to gauge it against that, but it can be pretty tough to do.
It can be challenging. Yeah, it is tough. Well, you know, and then, you know, so we got the pike going on in March, and then of course the walleye and sauger bite, and you know, all fish that time of the year, a lot of them are starting to take in more energy for the spawn, right? They're taking in more food. They call that to putting the feed bag on for the spawn. And you know, there's some opportunities to really catch a lot of walleyes and saugers in the month of March. And it's that whole extra month of ice fishing, and it's a cool month, you know, so you can get really, really cold one day where, I mean, it feels like January. And then the next day you might have, you know, 40, 45 degrees and there's water on the ice on top of the 3 feet of ice or whatever, you know?
Well, I want to talk limits and everything and how they've changed over the last couple of years and what you would like to see and what might happen statewide. I missed that discussion at the roundtable last week. I know they brought up statewide walleye limits, but we'll do that next week. We're out of time. Joe, if people want to book a trip to Lake of the Woods, where should they go?
Absolutely. Hey, check out our Lake of the Woods tourism website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Sporting Journal Radio is a division of Macaba Media, LLC. Find us online at sportingjournalradio.com to listen to past shows, download the podcast, and more. And search for Sporting Journal Radio on Facebook and Instagram for outdoor videos, tips from the experts, and more. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening to Sporting Journal Radio. We'll see you next week.